Hi, this is David from Slovakia and the Euroch Fan Club, and this is ProHockey News Podcast. Go, Avs, go!
Hello, hockey fans from around the world. I am Richard Cote, the producer of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. It is the second line edition of the podcast, and you know what that means. Yes, if you are hearing my voice, it means I feel good, and I knew that I would. It also means I am joined by the publisher of ProHockeyNews.com, Lou Lafredo. Lou, how are things?
Richard, things are going really well. I hustled back to the office studio here and made it in time. So Mimi, my cat, and I are just sitting here taking in all the goodness.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. It also means we have our snarky Canadian from up in Edmonton, Jacob Doherty. Jacob, how are things with you?
Good. Last Wednesday was International Women's Day, so I would like to give a shout out to the best hockey player and probably one of my favorite hockey players to ever play the game, Marie-Philippe Poulin.
Oh, cool.
And yeah.
All right.
Things are
excellent.
Good.
Nice.
Listeners, this episode of the Pro Hockey News Podcast is brought to you by My Custom Sports Chair. Head over to mycustomsportschair.com. Enter in code PHN15 to get 15% off your purchase from that site. Quality chairs to put in your fan cave or wherever you would like. I'm thinking of putting one out on the back porch here soon. My rant this week, not much of a rant, just more of an update. Two-thirds of the Cote household is now COVID-free. Yay, we are slowly getting back to 100%. I will take the 66% because as of earlier this week, it was zero. Everything is fairly mild. No big, to-dos with this. Just trying to get rid of the cough, and that's about it. Basic illness recovery, which is kind of hard when you have a 3-year-old who keeps bringing stuff back home from daycare. It's you think you get everybody back up and running, and then somebody is down with something. So looking forward to being happy and healthy here soon, however long that may last. All right, listeners, enough of my rantings or updates, whatever you may want to call them this week. Let's get on with the bangers and mash. I know you've been waiting for it. Lou Lafredo, what do you have for us across the pond this week?
Oh, I Letty.
Well, that's a good start.
I've been trying to work that one up for a while. It's been an interesting week, actually 2 weeks since the last we all met. Actually, it's 4 weeks since the last of all of us met, but the last time that Jacob and I talked, we were getting prepared for the Challenge Cup derby, if you will, between the Belfast Giants and the Fife Flyers, who surprisingly edged out the Sheffield Steelers for that final spot in the finals. And since we all last met, the Belfast Giants made quick work of it. I think by the time the middle of the first period was gone, this game was over. So the Belfast Giants have taken the first real silverware of the season with that win over the Fife Flyers. But congrats to the Flyers for making it through. Richard, the last time Jacob and I were talking about this, the Flyers played 3 games in a row with the Sheffield Steelers and essentially went 1-1-1 with all of the games going 1-0.
Wow.
So the Flyers, despite them hanging out in the 9th spot, they're below the line for the postseason, they played the Sheffield Steelers as tough as anyone has in many years. So good on them. But back to the standings, the Giants, as we speak today, are in fact in the number 1 spot. In the EIHL standings, they have 71 points through 46 games. They displaced the Guildford Flames, who were sitting up in the top spot except for the entire season, except for I think about a week. They're 3 points back with a game in hand and tied with the Cardiff Devils, who are in action tonight and looking to take over sole possession of second place. They have the 68 points as well. Sheffield Steelers round out the top four with 66 points in 45 games. They went through not a tailspin, but did go through some funk of late, particularly with those three games against the Flyers. Another team has clinched a position in the postseason. That's the Coventry Blaze. Rounding out the top eight, since we are getting close to the end of the season, Nottingham Panthers are in the sixth spot, Manchester Storm, and the Glasgow Clan.
Oh, thanks. Yes, the Glasgow.
Yes, I'm not being snarky or snip about this, but the Clan are above the cutoff for the playoffs. They have been playing okay. They got blown out earlier this week in one game, but they are above the line by 3 points, except that the Fife Flyers have three games in hand and the Dundee Stars have six games in hand on them. So the Clan have to continue to win in order to stay up there. So basically, that's it, Richard. That's the bangers and mash. We are getting close to the end of the season. As I said, the first silverware has been handed out. Second silverware will be the regular season championship. So right now the Giants are in position. You know, if it ended today, they'd have two pieces of silverware, and then obviously the final one is the playoff trophy. So that's it.
You know, it's really exciting to see the Glasgow Clan actually be mentioned as we get closer to the playoffs here.
Yeah.
Just given the start they had to the season, which was just absolutely dreadful.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, once you said that, I was keeping my fingers crossed for that eighth spot, and there they were. So
yeah.
Excellent.
In total, they have 14 wins, and you know, for the better part of the early season, they had no wins. So
yeah.
Good on them too.
Absolutely. All right. As we bring things back here to the North American continent, let's take a look at the ECHL standings. Starting with the North Division, the Newfoundland Growlers are on top of the division by a substantial margin. 10 points, you might say. Number two spot is the Maine Mariners. They do have two games in hand, but that's not enough to make up the 10-point deficit they have right now. The Reading Royals in the number three spot and the Worcester Railers in the number four spot of the North Division. The South Division, the Jacksonville Icemen continue to play fairly well, 7-2-1-0 in their last 10, leading that division with 72 points. The Florida Everblades, trying to keep pace, 4-5-0-1 in their last 10, with 70 points. The South Carolina Stingrays in that number three spot with 69 points, and the Greensville Swamp Rabbits in the number four spot in the South Division. In the Central Division, the Toledo Walleye, keep a note on them. We're about to talk about them here in just a minute. Leading the division by 1 point with 80 points. The Cincinnati Cyclones hot on their heels with 79 points. The Indy Fuel in the number three spot with 72 points. And the Fort Wayne Comets in the number four spot with 60 points. Going to the Mountain Division, the Idaho Steelheads are leading the division with 89 points. Talk about a little gap here in the standings. The Kansas City Mavericks in the number two spot in the Mountain Division with, this is not a typo, 59 points. The Allen Americans in the number three spot with 57 points, and the Wichita Thunder rounding out your top four with 57 points. Okay, I thought the 10 points was a big gap. 30 points is a little bit bigger. But as I mentioned, we are going to come back to the Toledo Walleye, who are just on an unbelievable streak right now. Winners of their last 10. In fact, they have a 15-0-0-1 streak going on right now. Lou, what is going right in Toledo?
Well, you know, we typically start with offense, so we'll do that again tonight. Brandon Hawkins leads the team with 31 goals through 52 games. He's got 48 points so far. Excuse me, 64 points. My eyes betrayed me on that one. 64 points through 52 games. George Green, Gordy Green, comes in on the second Second spot here with 55 points through 50 games, 23 goals. So basically, you know, they have just been something of a machine on offense, obviously, through these last 16 games. A 16-game point streak and 15 of those wins is just staggering. And I chuckled almost as you were reading, as you were saying that the Cyclones were hot on their heels. I'm not quite sure it's the Cyclones hot on their heels or just trying to hang on for dear life at this point, because obviously the Walleye have just put the hammer down here and sort of not running away with it. But, you know, it's kind of hard to recover when you've been in the lead most of the season as the Cyclones were, and then to suddenly turn around and find yourself looking up.
Not to discredit Cincinnati, they have won 11 of their last 13 games.
It's not 15 of 16. That's right. You know, it's all of that interdivisional play has, I think, really pushed the Walleye ahead. Defensively, the team is pretty solid as well, both on the defensive side as well as picking up offense. You know, guys like there's another Gordy Meyer in this case, 21 points on four goals, and Ryan Lowry has picked up 3 goals and 21 points as well. So these guys are not only doing it on the defensive side, because each of them are on the plus side in their record, but the points are also being collected here as well. So
there is not a player on that roster that has worse than a -3 in the plus minus category, and there are no defensemen who are in the minus category in that plus minus. So
the worst one is a 0.
Exactly,
it's just a 0. Yeah, the goaltending has been solid as well. 2.03 is the goals against average for John Lehtinen, and Sebastian Kosa has a 2.5 goals against average and a save percentage. Each of them is over 900, with Kosa at 911 and 928 for Lehtinen. Excuse me, I don't know what it is with my teeth today. So I think that's the leadership of this team pushing them forward.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll take a 928 save percentage. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah. I'll take the 911.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
most teams in the NHL would take a 911 save percentage right now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's keep an eye on the Toledo Walleye, see how they finish, you know, their season as we come up on, I believe, like the final 17 games of the season. So we're, you know, coming down the stretch.
Yeah.
Let's turn our attention to the AHL and take a look at the Atlantic Division. Got a little bit of a, you know, game of leapfrog at the top of the Atlantic Division. The Hershey Bears back in top of that division, leading by a point with 75 points. The Providence Bruins right behind them with 74 points. The Charlotte Checkers, having played 2 more games, in the number 3 spot with 69 points. And the Springfield Thunderbirds with 64 points, rounding out your top 4. In the North Division, the Toronto Marlies are leading the division with 79 points. The Utica Comets are in the second spot with 62 points. And the Syracuse Crunch in the number 3 spot with 61 points. And the Rochester Americans in the number 4 spot with 57 points. Lou, I have a question for you in just a minute. Once we get through these standings, has to do with the Americans. So Okay. Stand by. In the Central Division, the Texas Stars are leading with 70 points. The Manitoba Moose, who we're going to talk about in just a minute, are in the number 2 spot with 69 points. The Milwaukee Admirals in the number 3 spot with 69 points as well. And the Rockford Ice Hogs, still one of my favorite names in this league, in the number 4 spot with 62 points. In the Pacific Division, the Calgary Wranglers are leading the division with 83 points. The Coachella Valley Firebirds still trying to chase them down with 5 games in hand with 80 points. The Abbotsford Canucks in the number 3 spot with 69 points. And the Colorado Eagles, struggling as of late, still managed to stay in that number four spot with 67 points. Before we get to our talk about the Manitoba Moose, I just need to get a preference from Lou here. Is it Rochester or Rochester?
Oh, Rochester.
Because I know it's Worcester.
It's Worcester. Yeah. No, it's Worcester.
Okay.
Adirondack and Rochester.
Okay. I know things can be funny in that area of the country. Like,
oh, yeah.
Sometimes you just read it and you're like, well, is it really that? Do the locals? I was pretty sure about Rochester because, you know, I've heard that a lot growing up. But
well, I've got one for you. Is it Missouri or Missouri?
No, I mean, it's, from what I hear from all the natives of the state, nobody calls it Missouri. It's Missouri. And I told them to show me, but they wouldn't. So let's move on to the Manitoba Moose. For those of you who do not know, the state slogan of Missouri is the Show Me State. All right. The Manitoba Moose. Now that we got all that ridiculousness out of the way, 7-1-1-1 in their last 10. They are trying to chase down the Texas Stars in the Central Division. Lou, you wanted to bring up their play as of late. What have you noticed out of Manitoba?
Well, first of all, they're far more consistent than their NHL brethren, the Jets.
No.
That's the reason. That's the real reason why I want to talk about this. Actually, what I found interesting was that in terms of scoring, the defense tandems are all part of the top 10 in scoring on this team so far this season.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm going to butcher some of the names, but give me a – oh, yeah. So
Declan Chisholm?
That's it. Thank you. I'm having a hard time. Sorry.
It's all right.
So 5 goals and 40 points so far this season in 54 games. Picking up the second spot is Leon
Gawanki.
I guess so.
I would guess.
What are these names?
Yeah, 14 goals and 28 points on the season on 14 goals, and then Ville Heinola. Heinola, yeah.
I think it's Heinola. Yeah.
Yeah, 27 points on 3 goals, 24 assists. And you know, you start to see that, and you can see where the Moose have really had an impact on the schedule coming down the stretch. If you're getting that kind of offensive contribution from your defense pairings, then you can see where so they've got points in 9 of their last 10 games. So that's why they're making a push up that Central Division and threatening the top spot.
Yeah. I mean, also, you know, their goaltending, not terrible. You know, it seems about the middle of the pack.
Right.
And they're scoring about the same. But it seems like, as you mentioned, in their last 9 games, they've really, been able to turn up that offense and boost those numbers. So interesting to see, 1 point separating first and second place there in the Central Division. Everybody playing about the same amount of games. So as we come down the stretch, it'll be interesting to see who wraps up in that number one spot there in the Central Division. All right. Let's turn our attention to the NHL. Trade deadline done. We'll talk about our opinions of winners and losers here in just a minute. A couple of headlines to come out. Kind of one of the big trades from the trade deadline, but it happened early on. Ryan O'Reilly, who went from, of course, the St. Louis Blues over to the Toronto Maple Leafs, played 8 games, ended up taking an Austin Matthews shot to the hand, broke a finger, surgery needed, out 4 weeks. Big name that you bring in to try and boost yourself in the Atlantic Division, a very competitive Atlantic Division, especially when you're trying to chase down Boston, and then you have Tampa, breathing down your neck, trying to, jostle for position in the standings there. To have a guy like this go out, succumb to friendly fire. Jacob, I mean, what are your thoughts about, you know, how he went out and the impact this is going to have on the lineup for Toronto?
Is Austin Matthews sabotaging the Toronto Maple Leafs? But it's gonna be huge. But I don't think it will actually make a difference depending on how well he actually recovers, because I assume the 3.5 weeks that has been announced by the team is going to be very expedited just so he's on the team before the playoffs. I can't imagine they're going to move much in the standings. They're pretty set in that second or third spot in the Atlantic. But this, if he goes into the playoffs and he's not 100% and he does need a bit more rest, that could be an issue because you need him at 100%, especially if you're going against a juggernaut like Tampa Bay.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's really important for positioning in the standings, not that, you know, they can advance, because, you know, Boston's just running away with the division at this point. But you want to stay in that second spot. Your away record, well, not horrible, is nowhere near your home record. And Tampa Bay, giving them home ice advantage in the first round, just to me screams another first round letdown for Toronto.
Especially in the inevitable game seven.
Exactly.
Because I would expect that series to go to seven games no matter what.
Yeah, all joking aside, that is going to be a really good series, and we're basically guaranteed that.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I do think that it will be up to the rest of the team, but their team around him is actually much better than previous years. They do have a lot better, much more stable defense than they had in previous years. So I think they'll be fine. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, this team has always had, you know, decent players up front, people who are able to, you know, put the puck in the net, at least come the regular season. And then just, you know, the wheels just seem to come off first round postseason. I was reading a stat that the Toronto Maple Leafs have the same number of first round advances since 2004 as the Atlanta Thrashers.
Yeah, but, great. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Wow. Now who's the snarky one?
That's
always me.
I mean, you know, just setting the record straight.
Yeah.
I mean, Lou, do you think this really, like, in my mind, this has a huge impact on the team, but this is a team who's been playing well up to the trade deadline. Yes, Ryan O'Reilly was a huge addition for the team. I believe he has scored 5 goals in the 8 games he's played with them. But they have been able to solidify this second spot before they got Ryan O'Reilly. Do you think this is a detriment to them right now as they try and, you know, maintain that second spot in the Atlantic? Or do you think this is, you know, kind of a, you know, a blessing on timing where he's going to be able to recover and be healthy for the playoffs?
Well, the timing of it, he slipped right into this lineup. He had a hat trick. What was it, the second or third game that he played?
Second game, yeah.
Second game we played with the Leafs. So this was a seamless transition out of the Blues to the Leafs. And I think having picked him up early was the opportunity to get him into the lineup ahead of the deadline instead of waiting at those extra few days. So he got a couple of games under his belt before the deadline was there. But I, you know, maybe you get him rested coming back. Maybe Toronto can do something with the salary cap since he's not going to be playing. You know, I'm looking at it. They've got five. They're 5 points clear of the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're both even in games at 64. I don't think it's bad, because I don't know that Tampa Bay has got the horses this year. There's something going on. They lost, what, 5 in a row?
Mm-hmm.
Four in a row, and then just managed to pick off a weakling in the league to stop the run. So I think they're okay. I think they're okay without him, but the sooner he's back and playing to get some regular season games under his belt again before hitting the playoffs, that'd be the best.
I did just check the schedule, and he'll have, assuming the timeline is correct, he'll have at least 2 weeks of actual regular season play before the playoffs.
Okay.
Yeah,
in the lineup. So, you know, that actually gives them a lot of wiggle room. I think they're going to be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Okay. So, before we move on, and because I like, you know, beating a dead horse, as they like to say, going into the playoffs with Ryan O'Reilly, Jacob, is this the year that Toronto gets out of the first round?
If this isn't it, I don't think they ever will, because this is a really good team. Right? And Tampa is looking pretty mortal. Now, will they get past the second round?
I mean,
probably not.
Because they're probably going to have to play Boston in the second round.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll keep an eye on that. Okay. So we have, one player out with a hand injury after the trade deadline. Another player who hasn't taken the ice yet this season. Big name. One I'm following closely here in the Colorado area. Gabriel Landeskog had surgery in the offseason to take care of an issue with his knee. This is unrelated to surgery he had last year before the playoffs. So he has not taken the ice for any of the games yet this season. And now Coach Jared Bednar says he's not sure when Gabriel Landeskog will be taking the ice for the Avalanche this year. There was timelines given at the beginning of the season. It might be mid-March. As we're approaching mid-March, it sounds like it's going to be even further from that, as he's having complications, trying to get back and get comfortable. It sounds like he is working at it. He is taking some, pre-practice skates, getting out there, trying to, get things comfortable and back moving the way they used to be. But it sounds like, he's still having trouble with that knee. He's still not ready to come back. And they're not sure if he is going to be back at all this season. So, a big hole in the lineup for Colorado all season. But this did spark up a debate, and I want to bring you two in to weigh in. If Gabriel Landeskog is considered a scratch for the rest of the season, does the club need to name a new captain? I'm going to start with Lou.
Wow. Here's the real rub with Bednar's comments. He said he didn't think that Landeskog would be able to come back as an elite player. And that's disturbing, because now you're going to have somebody who's really and should be more concerned about their physical health and mental health going forward. So, yes, I think you need I think the Avs need a new captain.
Jacob?
I don't think so. I think that is a very bad precedent to set. I think if you do that, how does the locker room feel? Unless the rest of the locker room is asking for it, I would say absolutely not. Mm. Because you completely just sever any and all trust in your team with your upper management, with Jared Bednar, with Joe Sakic. You can't do that. I think that's just something you should never do. I think you just trusting your guys like McKinnon and Rantanen, and just wait it out and see what happens with the injury, because you don't take a captaincy away unless it's over 2 years. I think if he doesn't play another year, then yes, you kind of don't have a choice there. And then everyone understands. But if there's a chance that he can come back or for the next season, I think you keep him as the captain. It does not matter if he's still an elite player. You just don't do that.
Now, let me add on to that. You know, Landeskog has, you know, in the last couple of months been around the club. He's been in to be able to skate before practice. But before that, he had been spending a lot of time in Toronto. He'd been spending a lot of time back home. He hasn't really been around the club until the last couple of months. This seems to, especially, you know, a lot of the sports reporters around here, kind of seem to think that maybe this was bad timing to get this surgery done, that he waited so long, that he's missing this much of the season, that he hasn't really been around the club. That might be cause for him to lose that C. I know the locker room really likes him and they respond well to him. He's been a captain for a long time for the Avalanche. But the fact that he has not been on the ice, that he has not been able to have that impact that he has, even, you know, just being around the practices and, you know, being in the locker room, motivating your players, you know, things that the captain needs to do, doesn't seem like he is fulfilling those roles. So this is why this conversation has been coming up, at least in our area.
You just said that he's been around the last couple of months.
The last couple of months, yes.
And guess when they started turning things around. Right.
But they've also had, you know, players on the IR to begin the season. They've had players come in and out. They've had a whole host of issues.
And also on the front for the surgery, the more I think about it, the more I am of the mind that it might not have been his decision when to get the surgery. He might have been told by doctors something and has acted on that advice. And we will not know that until well after this entire situation has been settled. So, to me,
it seems kind of hard to believe that you have a high level athlete like this who cannot find a doctor who would be able to, you know, go through. I mean, unless, again, we don't know the whole circumstances around the scheduling of this. But it seems to me it's kind of hard to believe that there wasn't a doctor who either A, could have done it sooner, or that they were telling him to put it off for. Again, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know what the conversations would have been. But let's assume that Colorado decides maybe for the rest of the season they need to have a C on a jersey that's on the ice. Lou, who would be your top choice for Colorado to wear that C?
Makar.
Oh, okay. You'd go Makar over MacKinnon?
Yeah. yes.
Interesting.
I think Makar is a far more, I don't mean this poorly, but a far more aggressive member of the team. And again, it's not a negative. Mm-hmm. I don't see MacKinnon as a captain. Nothing against him. It's just I think Makar would be my ideal choice.
Interesting. Jacob, who would be your choice?
If I'm trying to find out, I mean, if you really have to, I would say MacKinnon. But if not, maybe if Eric Johnson comes back.
I mean, he is, as they said in the during the parade, he is the old guy. I am paraphrasing there on the team. So, yeah, I mean, he is the guy with the most experience on that roster.
And that's only if you have to do it for this season. But my first choice would be MacKinnon, and purely because I feel like if you either don't do MacKinnon or Rantanen, I think you could run into some issues with some people in that locker room. I don't know who. Maybe there might be with Makar, because you're just saying, oh, who's the shiniest toy in the shop? and you're just going to give it to that, right? And then your seed just effectively doesn't matter as a leadership tool, which it did with Landeskog, right? Landeskog is a leader. He's not dead, but
yeah.
Otherwise, but you need to have him. You can't throw your faith in your players. Faith in the organization and the management just so willy-nilly, because I think the captaincy would do that.
So a little bit of a fun fact, you know, of the captain and the two alternates, there is only one alternate who is currently on the ice for Colorado, and that is Nathan MacKinnon. Both the captain, Landeskog, and Eric Johnson are on the IR right now as we speak. I would have to go Nathan MacKinnon too, just because, and I think Mikko Rantanen would be a great second choice as well. I think both of them have, at least earned the respect of this locker room. They have been here, pretty much their entire careers. They were drafted by Colorado. They've had a lot of success. They've seen a lot of ups and downs with this club. They know how to motivate. MacKinnon has maybe just a little bit more passion for lighting that fire than Rantanen would. If he's been with the club a couple more years, Cale Makar would make more sense to me. I know he's had a lot of success. He is a very elite player. He's probably one of the definitive defensemen of this era. But I just don't think he's had the experience that other players on this roster have had, and, experience that they can share with some of the younger players. That's why I would go with, MacKinnon or Rantanen. Okay. So, hypotheticals, again, we don't know when Landeskog's coming back. We don't know if he's coming back this season. We don't know what form he's going to be in, but this is all just a fun game of, if you had to, who would it be? Again, to be clear, no rumors that the C is being stripped off Landeskog at any time. It sounds like Jared Bednar has full faith in him, when he does make his return, at least for his captain duties. All right. As we saw at the end of last week, last Friday was the NHL trade deadline. We saw, a few fun pieces flying out at the end of the trade deadline. So I wanted to bring this up, get some opinions here, because that's what we love to do on the Pro Hockey News podcast. Winners and losers of the trade deadline. I just want to, pick some brains here, see who you think, which team did the best, and then maybe we'll take a look at divisions. Jacob, who's your first winner?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I'm probably going to steal Boo's answer here, but the Rangers. They got Vladimir Tarasenko, who's already made such a fantastic impact, and Patrick Kane for effectively nothing. So, and they were able to fit that around in their cap, and they still have a first round draft pick next year, or this year and next year. So I am amazed that they didn't actually have to give up that much. And I think in the arms race that is the East this year, I think they're in a decent spot.
Saw a big grin on Lou's face when you brought up the Rangers. Lou, is that who you have as your winner this year too?
Well, because I didn't have to talk about them then. Jacob, you just said they didn't have to give up much. You were absolutely correct about that. And here's the thing that I was listening to somebody this week last week ahead of the trade deadline itself. It has gotten to the point now where if you are picking from 16 and below in the first round, if you're a team picking the 16th pick and lower, you are far less likely these most recent years to actually see an NHL product come out. of those that bottom half. And I did do some research a couple of, well, probably about a month, 6 weeks ago, thinking about the draft. When you get to the third and fourth rounds, the chances of making it to the NHL are actually approach nil. Single digit percentages of being able to make it to the NHL. Now, it just reinforces, Jacob, what you said. The Rangers gave up very little to pick up Tarasenko, who fit fitting in seamlessly. You have to wonder what was wrong in St. Louis that neither he nor O'Reilly could do anything in St. Louis. And the two of them show up with new teams after playing for their old teams for years. Dropped into new systems, new teammates, new cities, and just, you know, go to town. Patrick Kane had not had an opportunity to practice with the Rangers until Tuesday of this week. So, but my team that has improved, and it's hard to imagine them improving, are the Boston Bruins. They picked up Orlov because they lost Terrell Hall and Foligno to injury. Mm-hmm. Both of those injuries may go to surgery before the regular season is out, effectively ending their seasons. And yet, what did Boston do? They went out and picked up. The other guy's name just escaped my head.
Tyler Bertuzzi.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you. Yeah, Orlov and Bertuzzi, who talk about being shoehorned into the roster and producing, you know, Orlov has been on fire since he arrived in Boston from the Capitals. So thank you, Jacob, for mentioning the Rangers because it gave me a chance to talk about the Bruins. Richard, what about you?
Well, I was going to, you know, take the Bruins, but I didn't want to feel like, you know, a total fanboy there.
Yeah, same here.
And I was gonna tease Jacob a little bit by saying I thought it was gonna be the Edmonton Oilers, but you know I couldn't say that with a straight face. It's to me it's a toss up between the New York Rangers and the Boston Bruins. New York Islanders also I think made some fairly decent moves at least to get them in a competitive spot where they are right now. But yeah, I think overall, you know, pretty much pick a top team in the East, and they did a fantastic job of solidifying what they need to be able to compete come postseason. I think, as we had mentioned a few weeks ago, you know, the West kind of stood still. There weren't a whole lot of big moves, at least into the West, you know. So, yeah, I think overall my biggest winner would have to be the New York Rangers, Boston number two there. All right, let's talk the biggest losers of the trade deadline. And I would like to start with Lou.
I'm going to turn this on its head a little bit.
Okay.
I think the biggest losers are the guys who left Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
Vancouver is running 6-2-1 in their last nine. I don't know if that's Tocchet. In fact, I doubt that it is. I have a feeling that Vancouver has gotten better by subtraction.
Interesting.
So, it's not. I don't have a loser team because I really don't. I don't see a team not doing anything as being a loser. As you said, the West stayed pat. They didn't have to get into an arms race like because let's face it, the Metropolitan, they're all competing against each other for the newspaper print, mm-hmm. for column space. The Colorado Avalanche don't have to compete with anybody. Vancouver, I think Bo Horvat and a raft of guys who left are the losers in this one.
Jacob.
I was actually going to say Vancouver. That's the biggest loser. But I do see what Lou's point is. I am of the mind that so many first round draft picks and so many just top tier prospects and just everything was flying around. Draft picks were going like crazy. Mm-hmm. And Vancouver didn't get anything. They didn't get much of anything other than the Horvat trade.
Yeah.
And I think at the time of the draft, which is, I believe, probably when they're going to make all their moves, I think that's going to be when I think the value of a lot of those draft picks are going to go slightly down, especially for like the top 15. The top 15, like Lou said, they are very, very good picks. They're coveted picks that are hard to acquire. And mm-hmm. you don't do that until, and oftentimes, the times that teams get bit really hard in giving up those draft picks are when they trade years ahead. So like a 2024 or 2025 draft pick, teams will get bit by falling after, you know, competing 1 year and then just kind of falling off because they can't really sign anyone. I feel like Vancouver could have done that and they just missed that opportunity. I also think Philadelphia lost pretty hard.
Oh yeah.
I feel like Philadelphia just didn't really get anything.
It didn't do anything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to retract my, one of my statements. And say there really weren't any losers? No, Jacob is right. The Flyers, I think, screwed the pooch on this one. They really, they had the opportunity to get rid of an awful lot of dead weight. I guess it proves just how dead the weight is.
Yeah.
Hey, at least they got Brandon Lemieux to make them one of the most dislikable teams in the league.
Right? It was, you know, you hate to see somebody leave your favorite team, but when he left the Rangers, like,
yes.
See ya.
Well, everyone had a sigh of relief when he left the Rangers.
See ya.
We got something for him? What?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Richard, who's your loser?
So I got a little bit of a tandem here, and one kind of feeds into the other. Not to discredit what this trade meant, my biggest loser is Jonathan Quick. Oh. Just the way that he went out in LA and the way they just, you know, up and traded him to the first team that would take him, you know, sending him off to Columbus and then Columbus sending him off to Vegas. Granted, I think he's in a better spot than he is right now. I don't think he's going to see much playing time in Vegas, but he has the perfect opportunity to exact his revenge on the club that betrayed him. But I am going to say this feeds into the LA Kings. They made a tough call here. They're trying to set themselves up for another potential Stanley Cup run. They're looking like they're in a good position in the West. They were trying to solidify a weak spot in that roster, but to up and trade a legacy player like Jonathan Quick, who was so instrumental in your first, you know, Stanley Cup runs. I feel like that was a giant disservice, not only to him, but to the fan base who absolutely adored him. But it was a tough call. So, you know, it's one of those, are you going to keep him on to appease the fan base and to, you know, appease him and thank him for what he's done for your club? Or are you going to send him packing in hopes to shore up that goaltending and be able to make another Stanley Cup run? Those are the hard decisions and big reasons why. Well, first of all, I don't have the sports sense for it, but I could never be a general manager. I would not be able to make those calls. I get, you know, too emotionally attached to players and I would want to keep them around. All reports in that, you know, Quick wasn't exactly happy about this. I don't think they had his consent to be able to be like, all right, you're out. I don't think he had a no movement clause on his contract. So, LA could have said goodbye at any time. But this is a franchise player who you're probably going to, you know, have some either building named after him, a practice facility, or, you know, something dedicated to him outside the arena. And you send him off to Columbus. I don't know.
That was
a tough call.
That was the insult.
That was the, yeah, I guess sending him off to Ohio, get out of here.
So I think the worst part about that trade is they didn't even need to. So if you're Columbus, or if you're LA, you could have easily traded a guy like Cal Peterson away, because you don't need the cap space.
No,
but you need like $1 million in cap space to make that trade work. That's it. You can just trade a player away and you're fine.
No, but what they needed was, they needed a little bit more solid play in the goaltending area, because Quick was, remember, Quick's not having that great a season. Last year he was doing, pretty great. We thought this was, a resurgence of, what we've seen from him in the past. This year, not so much. I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but I believe his save percentage was, well below 90%. His goals against average were somewhere around 3. To me, it's a tough call. Business standpoint, if you're not emotionally attached to a player, you make that trade. You bring in somebody else who can do the job, because let's face it, he doesn't have very many seasons left in him, if any. So this could be his farewell season.
Yeah, and that's why he's a 37-year-old goaltender. I just don't think you have to do that. If anything, you can just there's actually a lot of things you can do if you're LA to make that work cap-wise.
I mean, do you reassign him to the AHL? I mean, that would be an expensive contract to, send down to the minors. But you got to have that roster would give you space.
That would give you that $1 million breathing room. But regardless, you just don't make that – you don't trade him away.
Not for Korpisalo.
No.
Exactly. Well, I mean, even if you want to get Korpisalo, sure. If you really want Korpisalo, send Cal Peterson in, like, say, a fourth or the Pittsburgh third that you have away if you really need it. Or if you really need him to make a run. But just doing that to your franchise guy, you just don't sign him in the offseason. And that's all you do, and you don't look like this.
I don't know. I mean, to me, it was a giant insult as just a fan of the game. But I do see the business side of it, that you're trying to put together the best team you can for the playoffs, and, Jonathan Quick wasn't playing his best. So yeah. That's what I see in that. That is my biggest loser of the trade deadline. So, all right. A last item we have here on the rundown as we go through.
Can I give a fun fact?
You can give me a
trade deadline.
Trade deadline fun fact from Jacob Doherty. Jacob,
actually, what do you have for us? It's more of a question or a quiz for you guys. Who has the highest point per game percentage of all the players who moved teams?
Highest point per game percentage.
Yes.
Of a player that moved teams. O'Reilly's up there with 5 goals in 8 games, but I feel like it's somebody who's played a ridiculously low amount of games here, like 2. He's
played over 3.
Over 3, okay.
Orlov would be my pick.
Yes.
Is it Dmitry Orlov?
It is Dmitry Orlov.
Oh, okay.
With 9 points in 5 games with an absurd 37.5% shot percentage. 37.5% of his shots went in the net. That is insane.
That is the definition of shot percentage. You're correct.
Yep.
Yeah, so. I know. Sorry. It's just so insane to me. But yes, Dmitry Orlov Orlov is, if he continues this pace for the rest of the season, he will have his highest career points.
You know, with that roster, I'm not going to be shocked if he does. Yeah, he's got a lot of good setup men there in Boston. Yeah. So, all right. As we continue mowing down these stories on the Pro Hockey News podcast, if you need mowing anywhere on your body, head over to our friends Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com/prohockeynews. Save yourself 20%. I will double my mistake there. 20% off your purchase at Manscaped. Thanks to our friends at Manscaped for sponsoring the Pro Hockey News podcast. All right, last item on the agenda today, Jacob, something a little bit closer to home for you. The Ottawa Senators have opened up bids.
Yeah, bidding has opened for the Sens.
And we've seen, you said nine bids for the club?
Correct. According to Sportico, there are currently 9 bids for the team, including Ryan Reynolds and a Toronto-based real estate developer, the Remington Group, put together bids, and they were upwards of $900 million.
And I had to ask Lou before we started recording that, you know, if the Ottawa Senators accepted our bid that we put in, the Pro Hockey News put in for this, right?
Yeah, I was going to send them 9 folding chairs from my custom sports chair.
Maybe we could throw in some Manscaped too. Maybe they'll appreciate
a couple of bracelets from Lisa at LDE Affinity.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what becomes of this. I don't know. The inner workings of the Ottawa area having a Toronto firm bid on their hockey club, does that jive with the fan base there, or they just want anybody at this point?
It's par for the course.
Okay.
Like, keep in mind the Pittsburgh Penguins got bought out by a Boston-based sports group.
That's true.
It's actually fairly common, but the key thing is Ryan Reynolds is the is attached to that, so it does look much nicer for fans. And also, it just doesn't really matter much.
They just want anybody at this point, right?
Yeah, and they also, I believe, a lot of this is attached to the idea that they are going to have a new arena.
Ooh, yes.
In the LeBron or LeBreton Flats site, which is quite close to the what's it called? Chateau Laurier. It's a few blocks away from that, which is adjacent to the river, to the Rideau Canal, to the Parliament Hill. So okay. It's, I think, the site is 6 or 8 blocks away from that. And we'll see how that goes. The city still has to actually approve, but right. They have signed an understanding for a new downtown arena. So there are steps between that. We don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's likely that in good faith, because that the Senators, the
moratorium,
but there's no T in that, but yeah. Is that actually, anyways, they basically agreed that they'll talk in good faith about having a new downtown arena. So we'll see how that goes.
All right. Yep. Watch that closely. I know everybody's keeping their fingers crossed for Ryan Reynolds to be part of the ownership group just because, you know, he's a good guy. Everybody kind of likes him. There's not much to hate. All right, let's move on to our Bet99 PHN picks of the week. Jacob, what do we have this week?
Well, we have to talk about last week first off. So last week, one of us had a very bad week.
Was it me?
Actually, no, Richard. Richard, you went 4-1. It
all was right.
Lou. 1-4.
No, Lou, you actually
I won the Sabres game. on Saturday.
Oh, yes. Sunday. Buffalo won that game. Whoops. Yeah.
So I went 3-2.
No, you bet, Sabres. Sorry, Lou went 1-4. And I went 2-3.
Right.
Did I go 1-4?
It takes some talent to be that stinky.
I also went 1-4. Wow, I messed up. Whoops. So, yeah. Give me a second to change this.
So Richard is in the first spot.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, I wish I could take this glorious record to the first line edition. I am... both of you would be well ahead of me in the first line, or maybe at least, you know, one pick ahead of me in the first line. So maybe I need to start, you know, trying to get some of this going on when I record with Adam and Lonnie.
Get this mojo.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now it's a battle for second place between me and Lou.
Okay.
So we'll see how this goes. For the first game, we got Vegas at Carolina. This is going to be a really good game. And Richard, as a leader, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, as the leader, you're going to start with me. Well, it's hard to bet against the Jerks at home. So I'm going to go with the Jerks.
Yeah. Lou?
I will take Carolina as well. The home ice thing is it's a difference maker.
I'm going to make it unanimous. I think the Canes, I really like the Canes. They're going to probably win at home. Next game, Winnipeg at Florida. Another really important game for playoff implications. Lou, I'll start with you now.
Panthers. I think the Jets are done. I have that feeling. Yeah, there's something funky.
Okay. Richard?
Yeah, Jets are 500 on the road. I'll take Florida.
I don't like Florida. I don't have... it's hard for me to have faith in Florida. And... I'm going to hope that Winnipeg starts to get it back together, because if not now, I don't think they are. So I'm going Winnipeg here. Hopefully they'll turn it around here for at least one game. And next one, Toronto or Edmonton at Toronto. Richard?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Edmonton 19-10-3 on the road. But Toronto 23-6-4 at home. Got to go with the Maple Leafs in this one.
Okay. Lou?
Same for me. I don't know. If I were an Oilers fan, I'd be very frustrated this season. So, Maple Leafs.
I am going to put a condition on my pick. I'm going to pick Edmonton as long as Skinner is starting.
Okay.
Because Jack Campbell has not been good this year. Jack Campbell has actually been a ginormous detriment. While our defense has also been kind of bad, I feel like Ekholm is going to help a lot with that. And same with Bjugstad. I think that those two pickups are going to help us out in the back end a lot. So I think Edmonton's defense is going to slightly get better, but Jack Campbell has not been playing great. He's been letting in a lot more than he should. And so I'll pick Edmonton if Skinner starts, Toronto if Campbell starts. And next game, we got Washington at the New York Islanders. Another very important game for playoff implications. So, Lou, I'm going to start with you this time.
Well, who do I want to win? Who do I think is going to win? On a hunch, I'm going to take the Caps.
Okay. Richard?
Caps are done for the season. I'll take the Islanders.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Richard here. They are close. They do have a chance. The Washington Capitals do have a chance at coming back, but I think the Islanders are going to win this game. Next, the final game of the Bet99 Picks of the Week is the Dallas Stars at the Seattle Kraken.
Ooh. Richard, this is going to be a good game.
All these games are actually going to be pretty good.
I will tune in for this one from California. Dallas at Seattle, correct?
Correct.
You know, I'm going to go Dallas. Seattle's not so great at home.
Okay.
Kraken. Kraken. Going to boil up some stars.
I'm also going to go Kraken. I just feel like their depth is going to, if we're going to start seeing more playoff hockey or yes, playoff style hockey. And I think that's going to benefit the Kraken much more than the Stars. And that's it for the Bet99 picks of the week. If you'd like to follow along, please follow with the hashtag VHM picks and follow along.
All right.
Yeah.
That takes us to our parting thoughts. Jacob, what's on your mind this week?
I've noticed throughout the season, it's been a really tough time trying to watch games. Just non-local games for just NHL games. I feel like the NHL needs to do a much better job at making hockey games much more accessible to watch for everyone involved. I think it's just doing a complete disservice to the league and to the sport, and I wish they would improve that.
Well, when we see what happens with these regional sports networks, that wish may come true. Lou.
For them all.
Well, I'll dovetail with Jacob, because if you think it's bad now, wait till the RSNs go out of business. And there are no games.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. So Jacob, you're, you just hit on something I've been writing about now for what, 3 weeks on the site. There's an awful lot of money going to disappear off the table. So that's my closing thought, Richard.
All right. To keep things cheery and wonderful as I always do. I have a little bit of a bone to pick with hockey fans, Avalanche fans in particular on Twitter. A couple nights ago, back on Sunday, I believe, they were playing the Seattle Kraken, ended up losing the game in overtime 3-2. It was their Pride night, so they didn't have a lot of social media postings about Pride night. And I cannot believe the amount of, you know, why is this being posted? This is not hockey. Please just post about hockey. Keep this out of sports. Posts that I saw, you know, and then after the loss, it just, you know, snowballed into, you know, oh, this is why you shouldn't do this and you should focus on hockey. Come on, guys, give it a rest. What we're trying to do is we're trying to make this game more accessible to everybody. And to single out a certain group who may not feel welcomed, and to deny them a one night out of the season where they are meant to feel welcome into the community that we absolutely love, you know, that's just despicable. This is a game that needs to grow, and the only way to grow it is to make it more accessible and more welcoming to all communities. And then, you know, later on in the week, I see the Avs, they go on and they, you know, they have a 6-0 win against, the Sharks. And then I see posts of, oh, you know, that, you know, that's great. Good job. Way to get the win. And there were, you know, just a few posts about that when there were hundreds of posts the week before or the game before. So, you know, I know social media is just kind of just giant cesspool of opinion at this point. But I just got to ask that, come on, Avalanche fans, hockey fans all around the world, let's do better. You know, let's not tear each other down when we're trying to celebrate a game that we all love and we're all trying to make better. So if you see something that you don't necessarily agree with, you don't have to say anything. Just let it be. And that is my parting thought. Thank you to all of our sponsors, LDE Affinity Jewelry, My Custom Sports Chair, the Chicago Wolves Merchandise Store, and Manscaped. For Lou Lafredo, I am, and Jacob Doherty, can't forget our snarky Canadian, I am Richard Cote, and everybody, thank you for making us a part of your routine. I will see you next week.